Hello and welcome to the Art Engager podcast with me, Claire Baum. I'm here to share techniques and tools to help you engage with your audience and bring art, objects and ideas to life. So let's dive into this week's show. Hello and welcome back to the Art Engager podcast. I'm your host, Claire Baum of Thinking Museum, and this is episode 128. Today I'm talking to Kylie Neagle about supporting self-guided visits for students and teachers through curiosity cards. Now, before our chat, don't forget in last week's episode, I was talking to Dickon Moore about engaging informally with visitors at Welcome Collection. If you haven't listened yet, do go back and download episode 127. And don't forget that the Art Engager has over 100 episodes to choose from, so you can take your pick from the back catalogue of different episodes to brush up on your skills, be inspired, and learn new techniques. And if you want to shape future episodes, do get in touch. If you've got a question for the show, an idea for a theme or a subject we haven't talked about, or if you want to suggest a guest, don't hesitate to reach out. I'm always eager to hear from you, especially if you're an educator doing innovative work with engagement around arts, objects and audiences in museums and heritage. And finally, if you'd like to support the Art Engager and help it to thrive in the future, you can buy me a cup of tea on buymeacoffee.com/Claire Baum. All right, let's get on with today's episode. My guest today, Kylie Neagle, is the Education Coordinator at the Art Gallery of South Australia in Adelaide. In her role at AGSA, Kylie has developed new resources for the permanent collection, including Art School in a Box and Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islanders Art in the Classroom. And over the 7 years, Kylie has also developed a rich professional development program for educators. This includes workshops focusing on critical and creative thinking, strategies to empower educators in the classroom and in the gallery, as well as engaging with artists from around the country. And finally, let's talk about the curiosity cards. These fantastic cards are a set of 52 tools designed to enhance art engagement among students, and they are perfect for self-guided gallery visits. They ease the pressure on teachers and they empower students to articulate their thinking. They promote long looking and also foster critical thinking, creativity, and confidence in discussing art. Here's our conversation. Enjoy. Hi, Kylie, and welcome to the Art Engager podcast.
Thank you very much for having me. It's great to be here.
So, Kylie, can you tell me a little bit about who you are and what you do?
Sure. So my name's Kylie Neagle. I am the Education Coordinator at the Art Gallery of South Australia here in Adelaide. And my job is basically, it's funded by the Department for Education, and I am responsible for taking care of professional development for teachers, resources for educators, as well as designing student programs. I am in a small team of two in our education team, and I have an education support officer in that team who takes care of all of our school bookings and the admin side of things. So we're just a very small team, but we get a lot done.
So you're a small team and you also have quite a unique funding model. Can you tell us a little bit about how that's set up and how that might affect the resources and offerings that you might offer to teachers and schools?
Sure. So funding comes through the Department for Education, which is our governing body of education in South Australia. And that funding is for my role, and it's over a shorter period of time. So every 4 years, we go back to the department for reapplying for that funding. And all that funding is purely for my role. There's very little that's left over in terms of being able to then hire in staff to do workshops and certain things like that. So a lot of our offerings are free. We have over 100 volunteers at the gallery, and without them, we just wouldn't be able to do what we do. If we have any other programs, which we do offer, like ticketed, I call them ticketed programs here at AGSA, so where teachers have to book in. It's maybe by request. It's not offered every day, such as like a drawing in the gallery workshop, a dancing in the gallery workshop, or writing in the gallery, as well as full-day portraiture workshops or introduction to landscape. But of that, of course, there is a cost involved, as we need to pay an artist educator to run those special offerings. And that cost is then passed on to our schools. So what we try to do is we run quite a lot of professional development opportunities for teachers, which are paid offerings. And then from there, we try to use some of the funds raised through that income to offer subsidised prices to schools that are maybe coming from the country or who are in a low socioeconomic area, that we can offer a subsidised price for those offerings. So any student visiting with their class or schools, they can come to the gallery for free. It is a free state institution. The collection is owned by the public. And so they are more than welcome to come to the gallery and have a free experience. Sometimes we'll have a ticketed exhibition, but it's a very nominal fee for schools to pay to get into those shows. And we also have a studio, which is funded through the James and Diana Ramsey Foundation, who fund that space. So we can offer that as a free offering as well. But essentially, we rely really heavily on our guides to deliver our programs. We get around, post-COVID, 20 to 30,000 students in a year. So it's quite a large number for us, and it's obviously exceeds what I couldn't be on the floor for every one of those school visits delivering sessions to them as much as I would like to. Yeah, it's just not something that we could do in terms of our capacity. So we rely very much on our guides and then spreading those offerings by, there might be a school that can afford a ticketed option, which then alleviates maybe some guides into those that can't. So yeah, we try and really take care of those schools that even just getting to the gallery is tricky. Like transport is a huge hurdle for many schools into even just getting into the city.
So all of this background is leading us towards what I'd love to talk to you about today, which are the curiosity cards that you've developed for self-guided visits, for student groups, teacher student groups that are leading themselves around the museum. Could you tell us a little bit about the shift that has happened in your professional development offerings? Mm-hmm. So towards methods that might be centering student engagement over more traditional content-driven approaches?
Yeah. So I started at the gallery in 2017. I was a high school educator prior to that. So when I stepped in 2017, there was a huge reliance on gallery guides, to the point where there were some schools were really upset if they couldn't get a guide and would have to cancel. They were really terrified of taking a self-guided visit. So throughout 2017, just took time to observe really how things were working and how we needed to shift, because the following year we then had a major exhibition, Colours of Impressionism, in which that year we had 40,000 students, and it really highlighted very quickly that we needed to change philosophy in the way that what we were expecting of our teachers and our guides, really, because we only have so many and we want to be able to put them in the right place to get the most out of them and for the schools as well. So we really decided to shift away, not so much away from guided visits, because we still offer them and we will continue to deliver that if that is what teachers request. But we did want to empower educators a bit more to take a self-guided visit and show them how it doesn't have to be a scary experience. A lot of the feedback is, well, I can't take my class through because I don't know anything about the works and I'm not an art historian. So, and they're wanting knowledge and facts and content. And so it was a bit of a turnaround in trying to change that way of thinking and showing them a different way that they could still engage with our collection. So yeah, in 2018, we said, okay, we need to develop some resources and some professional learning around critical and creative thinking. It's one of our key cross-curriculum priorities here in Australia, in our Australian curriculum. And we try and make sure that our resources really link back to that. So if like I said, hard for schools to get here in terms of buses, but it's also getting harder to justify a visit to a gallery or a museum for lots of other competing demands in schools at the moment. So often leadership will want an outcome. What do they return with? What are they going back with? And trying to just go, oh, they're developing their critical thinking skills, something that can't be seen yet because it's formative skills, is hard to, you know, pull over the line. So we wanted to really prioritize that and just make that the center of our resources. And we do it pretty much with all the resources that we create specifically for works of art now moving forward. But the curiosity cards themselves really were born out of that tipping point of thinking, okay, we need to rethink how we offer our guides to schools, and prioritizing them to country and regional schools and those in low socioeconomic areas, and then making other resources available for teachers to be able to take their own visit.
And we'll talk about the cards in a minute, but I know that you've also trained your volunteer guides with some other sort of inquiry-based approaches. How have they coped with the shift from perhaps more a traditional approach to these more inquiry-based approaches?
Yeah. So we had Carly Grace from the Heidi Museum in Victoria come out and do some DTS training with our guides and a select number of other education officers in the precinct. And they loved it. It was an interesting thing to watch them because their training with us takes a year and it's very content heavy. And, you know, when we have visitors that come to the gallery, that's what they want. They want to come and they want to listen to people talk about five or six works of art. So changing that model in a way was challenging, but I think some of them found it quite freeing because it meant that, oh, they could encounter a work of art that if children were drawn to that perhaps wasn't in their planned tour, they still had a way of unpacking the work of art, even though they may not have done their research on that work. The way that I talk to our guides about these strategies, the curiosity cards, anything else that I talk to them about, it's all just about having more tools in your toolkit. It's just equipping them with more and more skills that they can use to engage a variety of visitors. And this isn't just for schools, they can do this with the general public as well.
And I think those questions as well in the VTS questioning strategy, the protocol that they use, those three questions are incredibly useful generally in museum programs. You can use them, you can draw them out of your back pocket with more traditional groups that are there for the content. And you can also use them, as you say, in more pure kind of VTS approaches as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I often say to teachers when I talk about VTS is that we don't use a strict VTS model at AGSA, but sometimes when I'm running sessions, I'll start with that and then I'll begin to drip feed some information that may then add a layer of understanding rather than leading with this work of art is by X artist made in this year. And I just find when we lead with that content with students, they can switch off very easily if that is not something they connect with. So boom, they're out of there. Like they're not really there. They're being passive visitors by being polite and listening, but they're not really engaging with the work. I always think, okay, well, by that point, you've exhausted a bit of the VTS. And now it's like, oh, well, did you know that this work of art was made by a First Nations artist and it was made in 1970? How does that change what you're thinking? So not giving them all the information, but just little bits of info that starts to build some context about a work.
Yeah, I love that. It's using information in a way that can, as you say, help to build context, but it's using it strategically. It's thinking about how and when and how much information you're sharing rather than leading with it, which may have been the case in the past. We may have led with information, and now it's about using it in a more strategic way. I'm going to move on to the cards because I have the cards in front of me. You were gracious enough to send me a pack of these cards, and I'm had great fun looking through them and working with them. They're beautifully designed. There's some great questions, some great prompts for looking. So perhaps you could just give us an introduction to what the curiosity cards are and how they might support these self-guided visits for teachers and their students.
Sure. So they are a set of 52 cards, and we talk about them being as prompts for engaging with a work of art, and they are not content led. The idea with these cards is that you could use them in the gallery floor or a gallery in another state or another country. Likewise, you can use them in the classroom with reproductions or images on screens, which we do have quite a lot of teachers that use cards in that way. I will always lead with a couple of curiosity card questions as a warm-up or an icebreaker whenever I'm running a session with teachers. So if I'm running a session either online or in person, I will start with a couple of our curiosity cards as a warm-up, as a way to just change their thinking and get them in the mood. So I often lean to a couple of favourites. One of them is if this work of art were a food, what would it be? Or if this work of art were a person, what kind of person would it be? So it's a good opportunity for the group to hear different people's responses, to show that it's a safe space, that there is no wrong answer to these responses. And then another one of my favourites that I love doing on the floor, particularly around sculptural works, I feel that this works best, is doing a round robin. So a very quick word association game of looking at a work of art, looking at it for a minute, not writing anything, not talking in silence, and then listing five words in response to this work of art, and then going around that circle and sharing those words. It's really interesting just hearing everybody's responses. And what I love about it is that even if you have, and I've done it with students where they don't want to participate or because they're nervous to say something out loud in a group, they have to say pass. So they've had to say something. And so it gives them an opportunity to listen to everybody's responses as we go around the group a couple of times to know that, oh, okay, that wasn't a silly response to whatever they were thinking. I also think, and I say this to teachers, is that if you do a round robin with a work of art before you introduce who the artist is, what it is that you're focusing for the unit of work, you've actually already got a really good base for your description and your analysis, because all of those words will probably relate to those things anyway. So you've done like this group outpouring of word association that does lead to description and analysis. So yeah, those are a couple of my go-tos that I love.
There's two places I was going to go there. The first one was, yep, what other resources do you provide for teachers with the cards?
Sure. So when we send our confirmation emails, we will send a link to a sample sheet that we've got of the cards. So if teachers aren't able to get a set straight away, they might just use the sample sheet. And we have a companion resource that is a quick guide for self-guided visits. So we've actually put together a bit of a structure of like, these are the ones that we think you could do by just picking up that sheet and going into the space. Because sometimes schools will arrive and maybe a guide is unwell and they've had to be self-guided at short notice. So we try and give them a bit of a structure that they could follow really easily. We suggest to teachers that you can use the cards in so many different ways. Obviously, you're not going to do all 52 cards in a session. That is never the intention. We would imagine that you might pick, and teachers have done this most recently. We had a teacher out from Westlake Shore who took her students. She did a really great variety of experiences where they did a drawing in the gallery workshop. Then they did some self-guided experience where they used the cards, and the teacher had given them five of the questions and they went around independently and answered them. We find that we'd rather teachers use curiosity cards than bring in booklets. And I've always had a real aversion to worksheets and booklets with students because I just feel it interrupts the looking. Like you're putting something very detailed in front of a student that they're supposed to be looking at a work of art. And I've always said this to our guides and to all teachers that visit us, this may be the only time that your students ever come to the gallery. They may not come with family. It might not be something that they do. So we really want to make this experience enjoyable and get them looking at as many things as they are drawn to, really. But if they do want something where they can record responses, because some of these activities might be drawing a sculpture on display or drawing an outfit for a work of art, I always recommend, we've got these concertina booklets that we use at the gallery, and they're quite small. but they fit into the palm of your hand. And so you've just got that and a pencil and it's blank, and you can just keep folding the paper over for a different activity. And so if teachers do need that evidence of learning when they're returning to their classroom, they have something that they can show leadership as a result of a visit and can then be a springboard potentially for further learning in the classroom. So we really discourage booklets and worksheets and just a really small concertina blank cardboard booklet that they can draw or write in if some of those responses require that.
What have the responses from teachers been like? How are they finding the cards?
We've got a group of educators that engage with everything that we do, or they might just come to PD but don't bring students. But I've seen over these past 8 years, those teachers get really confident going, oh, we're just going to come to the gallery and I will run the session, and are not bothered about having a guide or not. We encourage teachers to send through student work as a result of a visit. So it might be that they've completed some curiosity cards and it's turned into a work of art, or they might have used one of our education resources. And I always think that our online student gallery, where we put all of these student works, is a result of teachers feeling confident about their teaching practice and safe with us to do so, which I just think is a really lovely thing. And it's always great for the kids to get a bit of a kick out of seeing their work online in the art gallery website. So from that, it's just been this really, I think, slow burn over the last few years of really developing those teachers' confidence in that. And we've had others that go back and use them in the classroom as a way of starting a lesson or developing those skills. There's a great book called Critical and Creative Thinking for Teachers. And a quote in that just always sticks in my mind about visual literacy. And in order to develop visual literacy, it takes patience, practice, and effort. And I think, oh, we just don't get enough time to develop those skills. And so I'm always emphasizing that quote and thinking about how the curiosity cards are just such a perfect opportunity for practice, to practice looking, to practice developing those critical thinking skills and being able to observe and really look and see at the objects.
And you mentioned looking there, and I've read a couple of times that you're with the cards, you're looking to encourage long looking. Can you talk a little bit about what long looking is and how the cards might foster that?
I always stress to teachers that we want students to be critical thinkers, and we want them to look at visual information, and that when they come to the gallery or if they're in their art lesson, we don't necessarily want them to all be artists or all to be art historians, but we want them to be keen observers of the world. And I just think that works of art are the perfect opportunity to practice that ability to look and look for longer. I think there's research that's been done about how much time an average visitor spends looking at a work of art, and what an insult that is to the artist in terms of how long they've spent making the work of art. And so looking for longer, when you look at some of the activities, say there's a drawing activity, drawing the sculpture on display, or a back-to-back drawing exercise, it's not a drawing exercise, it's a looking exercise, because you're having to slow down the pace at which you look at the work of art, and then maybe you look at it from another angle, or you look at it from a different distance. Maybe you get up close, and maybe you are now walking away. I often will do a really quick activity where I have students look at a work of art and then turn around and then just tell me what they saw, and then get them to turn back around again and go, okay, now what do you notice that you didn't notice the first time? And it's really interesting. Oh, I didn't see the sunglasses that person was holding, or whatever that might be. So it really does slow down the looking, because you're looking at an activity that's is quite out of the box. Like, you're asking students to design an outfit for a work of art. They're not expecting an activity like that. They're used to being asked, well, what's this work about? And them not knowing the answer. And why would they? They've just encountered a work of art for the first time. So I think it's a really safe option for students to build their confidence and not be afraid to just sit with a work for a longer period of time, and not just bypass it and say, oh, well, I'll see that and move on. That you actually sit with the work.
I love that you're encouraging longer looking through the use of these cards, and that that might then transfer into future visits to a museum or when students are in the classroom looking at art or texts, that these skills are actually transferable to other environments too.
Yeah, and that's really the key, isn't it? We want students to be visually literate for their entire lives. We want them to have these really great foundational skills that they can go off into the world and see advertising and political campaigns and be able to analyse what they're seeing and look at it for a bit longer and think, oh, hang on, what are they actually asking of me here? Oh, and can assess and make judgments and make a decision that's right for them. I just think works of art are such a great opportunity to practice those skills.
And in the cards as well, there's a variety of different activities and ways to engage that teachers can practice with their students. So can you share a few examples of different types of modalities that you're trying to incorporate through the cards?
Yeah. So I say to teachers, there are some cards that are quick, maybe 3 to 5 minute activities that are warm up type one, like the ones I've described previously. And then there's others which teachers could just do that one activity for the entire 50 minutes, or they could turn it into an entire unit of work. We had one teacher turn it into a unit of work, which was so lovely. It was assigning a soundtrack to a work of art. So the students had to select, I think, 3 to 5 works of art, and then they had to piece music to that work that they think suited it. And then they presented that to the class like later on back in their classrooms. And I just think, oh, that's such a great opportunity, because you're then able to tap into those students who might not be into visual arts, but they like music. And so they're able to pair what they think works well with something visual and something that has sound. Another one that I think has worked really well with teachers is giving students a word. So it could be slow, fast, hot, cold, angry, friendly, and getting them to find a work of art that relates to that word. So it's almost like a reverse round robin, but the results they're so wide ranging. Like I had one student that had hot and she had picked a ceramic vessel. And I said, oh, why did you select that? What made you select that? And she said, well, because when that vase goes into the kiln, it's going to get very hot in there for it to be able to become hard. And I was like, yeah, okay. So she really thought about the making part of that object and not just what it looked like. She'd thought through the process of it, which I just thought was lovely.
And I really love that those two examples highlight as well the critical thinking that is taking place, but also the creative thinking as well.
Yes, it's also about imagination. So it's not just about critical thinking. Write a story about a person in a portrait. It's an old favourite of many, but I think it's so underutilised. We have portraits galore in the gallery, and I think it's such a great one to stand in front of and go, who's this person? Tell me what's their life like. Or it might even be an empty room. Who lives here? Who are they? What is their story? And take it from that angle where kids can use their imagination and not worry about being wrong. I just think that we need to really stamp that out, because I think that stops quite a few students from putting their hand up and having an opinion because they're embarrassed. They don't want to be wrong. So this is a really safe space for those things to develop for them.
And I think also with the cards as well, it can be used by so many people, not just by teachers and their students. They're fantastic for that. But also I can see families picking up these cards and using them for a visit in the museum. Have you heard from other people who are using the cards in innovative ways?
So we haven't necessarily got feedback. As I'm probably sure you're aware, getting feedback from visitors is so difficult to do at times. Once they've had their visit, they've gone off into the world. However, we have a day at the gallery called Start, and it's a family day, and it's held on the first Sunday of every month. And for a year, we gave a set of the cards to the children that came that it was their birthday. So it was like their birthday gift. So they're out in the community somewhere. But we do also have quite a few guides that will do our evening tours when we have our late night First Friday events where they might use a couple of those, because they're the visitors that are coming on a First Friday for drinks after work to engage on a tour might be a little bit different to a Sunday or a Saturday tour. So they feel like they can have a little bit more freedom with, oh, let's throw a curveball in there that they weren't expecting. So again, like with the guides, it's about just having more things in your toolkit that they can draw from.
Yeah, I love that idea. And I also love the idea when I'm working with cards, and I told you off air as well that I'm a big fan of cards. I have lots of different sets of them, but I like using them to introduce that element of free choice as well. So maybe even letting the participants choose which card we're going to pick and then seeing where that takes us is great, just to switch things up a little bit sometimes.
And that's the thing about them as well, is they do promote advocacy for the visitor, and in this case for children, that they can select them themselves. So, and then select the work of art that they want to respond to, rather than being, okay, we're here at the gallery and we're going to look at this theme, so which means we're going to look at these six works of art. It doesn't allow flexibility for what students are drawn to, but the cards do. And so you can really have a student who will be drawn to something that you had never even considered. And it might be something that they like, the fruit that's in the bowl, or it could be the texture or the material. You don't know what they're going to be drawn to, but I think the cards really open up that avenue for, like you said, freedom of choice.
Love it. Yeah. And I'm going to put you on the spot here. If you had to pick one card out of the deck of 52, which one would you pick?
Oh, I'm just flicking through them now, thinking which one I like them all.
Do you have a favourite?
I have lots of favorites, but one I really like is create a new title for a work of art based on just looking at it. So not looking at the wall label yet, creating a new title, but also creating a story by collecting titles of works of art. So going around and you might select 10 works of art, and those titles become part of a short story or a poem. I like the writing ones. I think that's probably what I'm drawn to most, but a couple of curiosity-esque activities that I've started with groups this year, which obviously aren't in these cards, but writing a clue for a work of art, getting students to write a cryptic clue for a work of art, and then swapping that with someone else and them having to pick which work of art it is, or the teacher writing the clues and the students having to go and look for the work of art based on that description, I think is a really fun activity to do. We just did it recently with an online workshop, and it went really well. It was such fun. Yeah.
I love the sound of that. That sounds brilliant. So just to wrap up here, can you share ways that listeners can find out more about the Art Gallery of South Australia, your curiosity cards, and get in touch with you?
So the best way to contact me would be through our websites. Go to the education tab. And if you need to reach out to me personally, by all means, go via the education email. But the other way that you can engage with us is via our social media channels. So we are on Facebook and Instagram, and that is at agsa.education. The dot education is important because it's different to our main AGSA social media pages. So do engage with the education one. That is facilitated by me. So I'm at the other end of that account. So if you have a question, or if you're using the cards in classrooms or galleries anywhere in the world, we'd really love to see how you're using them. We do have a sample sheet on the website that you can access for free, easy to download, and it's got a page all about the curiosity cards, and you can also purchase a set from our gallery store.
Brilliant. We'll include links to all of those, including the social media account and the download, and of course to the cards themselves. So that just leaves me with time to say thank you so much, Kylie, for coming on the Art Engager podcast.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks so much, Claire.
So a huge thank you to Kylie for joining me on the podcast today. Go to the show notes to find out more about AGSA's curiosity cards and to get in touch with Kylie too. That just about wraps up this episode. Thank you for tuning in. Until next time. Bye. Thank you for listening to the Art Engager podcast with me, Claire Bowne. You can find more art engagement resources by visiting my website, thinkingmuseum.com. And you can also find me on Instagram at Thinking Museum, where I regularly share tips and tools on how to bring art to life and engage your audience. If you've enjoyed this episode, please share with others and subscribe to the show on your podcast player of choice. Thank you so much for listening, and I'll see you next time.